Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello, everyone. It is the Red Men Originals podcast there. I'm Paul Machin, Chris Page, Chloe Bloxham, Dan Club all join me for this one. We're going to be discussing Liverpool's defeat to Crystal Palace. We're going to be looking ahead to the Atalanta game. We'll be having a bit of a chat around sort of hope, faith and everything in between as well. But before we dive into it, obviously it is the anniversary, the 35th anniversary of the Hillsborough disaster. And as ever, just want to take the opportunity just to talk a little bit about it. Because I think we live in a culture where people just love the banter of football. And obviously we know there's been a wider movement against tragedy chanting at football games and what have you. And I think sometimes, and I thought it was really interesting that we've seen a rise of the sort of remembering that it's 97 human beings rather than just 97 being a number. Things get boiled down to hashtags a little bit too often, and there's a dehumanising aspect that comes with that. So obviously it's an emotional day in the city. It's an emotional day for the survivors of Hillsborough and the families of the survivors and the families of those who perished as well. And just to obviously have that in mind when you go conducting your business around the internet or the world today, to have a little bit of kindness on today of all days as well. And remember that, you know, those are men, women and children who went to a football match. If you've ever been to a football match in your life, they were just the same as you. And because of a horrendous mismanagement from the policing on the day, a lack of safety certificate for Hillsborough Football Ground, some people were unlawfully killed on that day and didn't come home to their families, to their lives, to their friends. One boy, John Paul Galuda, as young as 10 years old. So, yeah, a sombre day of reflection for Liverpool and one that we obviously wanted to mark. But also, obviously, the show goes on, as they say. So, yeah, we will press on with the podcast this week. We will talk about the football, but I'm always keen to sort of remind people of we love a good soundbite and few quite as good or as memorable as Bill Shankly's. It's not a matter of life or death. It's more important that when talking about football. But of course, Bill Shankly didn't live through Hillsborough. So I'm always sort of reminded by Jürgen Klopp's that football is the most important of the least important things. I think it's important to remember that sometimes, that it's a pastime. It's something that we supposedly do for enjoyment. So anyone who seeks to sort of use the deaths of other football fans just like themselves for their own gain or banter or whatever isn't worthy of time. Right, okay.
Well said, mate.
Thank you so much. Obviously, if you don't know enough about the Hillsborough disaster, please do seek out and educate yourself some wonderful resources online. And more so than ever, actually, in recent years, since we know the truth finally came out about Hillsborough, of course. But yes, anyway, there is no neat way to segue into talking about the football off that, so we'll just do it regardless. Liverpool 0, Crystal Palace 1. It's a tough one to take. I want to know, because obviously, Chris, I was at the game around Anfield with you and with Chloe. I've not spoken to Dan about it yet. I kind of want to know how everyone's feeling, because I think we were all pretty downbeat about it walking out of the ground. I think I was slightly more, philosophical about it than used to. I want to know how you're feeling, having had 24 hours or so to digest.
I felt okay last night after the Arsenal game, obviously. I felt like it was a missed opportunity and stuff then, more than ever. And so I got a bit annoyed about it in some ways, but confident enough that they can lose more points. Doing the final word this morning probably didn't help me, actually. So I've done the final word show, and I dredged everything back up. And so I think ultimately where I'm at, as a sort of overview, is I don't think we're the best side in the league. I think we're the third best side in the league. There's still a chance that we can win it, but it's going to be very, very difficult. And so because there's this realisation that we're not the best side in the league, I feel disappointed.
Chloe, you seem to be in slightly better spirits than I left you yesterday.
Yeah, it's... I don't even know how to describe it because I went home and watched the second half of the Arsenal game. Why? I don't know, but I did. And seeing them lose, it made me feel better, but at the same time, it made me more angry because, like you said there, it was a missed opportunity. Liverpool could have gone top on their own. And, you know, I've had a night to sleep on it and waking up today, it's 2 points behind the leaders, and look, you never want to give Manchester City the lead because they will never relinquish it. So it's more to me that I didn't expect Liverpool to be in this situation at the start of the season. It's been fun, and I think at some point I've got to say we have just stumbled at the starting blocks. That's what I feel like. We've run out of steam. What I will say is 2 points, anything can happen. So I'm still holding on the tiniest bit of hope. But at the same time, I think my focus is just on the fact that I know Jurgen Klopp's leaving at the end of the season and I've only got a couple of games left. So I might as well just go and support the lads and see if we can somehow get back into it. We're asking a lot of a team to beat Manchester City. You're asking absolutely, like, you're waiting on a miracle there because this is why they are so good. In these moments, they're an oiled machine and they just get on with it and they don't lose from these positions. So you are asking a lot, but at the same time, it's now not in our hands. So I'm going to at least, you know, try and get behind the lads and see what we can do.
Yeah. How about you, Dan?
Yeah, I'd say more optimistic than that, if I'm being perfectly honest with you. Mainly because... Listen, yesterday's performance, we'll talk about it in more detail and we'll pick over the bones of it, of course. I did expect a far better performance. I expected a response, to be honest with you, on Thursday night, which never really materialised, to be honest with you, for lots of different reasons, obviously. But having then obviously seen what transpired later on with Arsenal, them losing is not only a lifeline to Liverpool in so much as obviously they haven't got any further clear of us and all that sort of stuff, but also it's a little timely reminder for me that neither Man City nor Arsenal are bulletproof. And Chloe might be right, and Man City might well prove to be bulletproof from here on out, and if they do so, what can we do about that? But that happening made me think, okay, there's still points to play for, therefore there's still punch to be dropped, therefore there remains hope, in my opinion. Now, my concerns and my doubts are actually more, and this was not the case 2 or 3 days ago going into that Atalanta game ahead of that. My optimism was far higher because I believed at that point we could do 7 from 7. Now, on the back of these two performances and results, my optimism in that's the case just waned ever so slightly. And obviously now it's 6 from 6. I'm not entirely convinced we can do that. However, if we can do that and we can find a way in which to up our performances and do that in the next few games, then I think City and Arsenal drop points. Therefore, I still think the league's on for us.
I felt all reasonably okay about it because what we're going to do is we're going to go through all the bad. We're going to go excise all the things that did our head in about the match in a minute, and then we'll try and pick out some of the decent things, and then we'll come out of it and have a bit of a wider conversation around what Liverpool need to do to see if it's even possible to get back on track. But actually that Arsenal game did wonders for me because I had a sneaky feeling that they would drop points in that one, not actually prior to us losing, but actually almost because of us losing. We chatted very briefly about it before, Chloe, I don't ascribe to that thing of like it's a missed opportunity for Liverpool, because you'll never know. Even that small imperceptible impact that Liverpool dropping points has on Arsenal's mentality in that game, and that added pressure of, oh wow, it's ours for the taking now. This is the game where we go on and start to put the league to bed. So actually knowing that, well, you're saying that they're fallible, which we all knew, really. You know, no one's run. This is not a 99-point season. It's not a 100-point season. All teams are fallible, abate by the standards set by Liverpool and Man City over the last 5 years, not normal football standards where leagues can be won on 79 points, which seems totally alien to me. I'd love to try one of them seasons for Liverpool once in a while. But, yeah, I don't feel too bad about the whole thing. It will stem from... because I get to look at it now and go... I think Liverpool could have scored a hatful of goals. Yeah. And I think that... And I know that the rivals they're going up against aren't perfect. Now,
it'll still lead to Man City winning the game on the last game of the season because that's what happens for me, of course. But yeah, I don't feel as down and dumps about it. But anyway, look, let's go through the game then. I just want everyone to have an opportunity to just sort of vent on all the things that really did their head in about Liverpool's performance.
How long do we have?
I'm not sure
as long as it
time.
As long as it takes. Anyone want to, Chris, do you want to kick us off?
Yeah, the one where Darwin Nunes took it off Andy Robertson. Honest to goodness, what was he fucking doing?
We spent a good...
What was he doing?
10, 15 minutes in gridlock of traffic. I'm going away from Anfield yesterday. Would you just... constantly repeating this
is just fucking stupid, yeah. Isn't it? It was just ridiculous.
Take
you got Andy Robertson
away.
There. You got go make the run, take your man away. Just take your man away, and there's an easy pass on for you. But no, you do the dumb thing and you go and tackle your own player, and then you're in the middle of fucking no man's land with a defender on you. What are you doing? Yeah. Why? What was some of the things he does on a football field are incredible, and some of the things I see our under 18 team when I played football. He used to do just like go and run after the ball for no reason. Why? You're a professional footballer, engage your brain.
Yeah, you mean Andy Robertson should have engaged his brain and let the centre forward take the ball in the box instead of Andy Robertson, who can't shoot, continuing to run into the box.
He would have passed it to him.
He would have done, yeah. Eventually. Or Skadi, who's to know. No, I agree with that one. That was one of those moments where it was a tetchy cop, and it got tetchier as the game wore on, and the more opportunities that were missed, the more enraged everyone sort of became with it. Go on, Chloe, what you got?
I'm just sick and tired of Liverpool conceding goals early on in games and conceding first. Like, you already give yourselves a mountain to climb by doing it, and I'm sick and tired of seeing triangles around our team and us just running in circles. We can't get close to them, and there's always a deep lying midfielder making the run and the overlapping run, and not a single body tracks the lad. And I just thought for 20 minutes of that game, Crystal Palace had far too much space. They had too much space for the entire first half. But specifically 20 minutes, there was just lads who was just taking an entire midfield out the game by two passes, and they were just in on our defence. And if they were actually a bit more clinical, it could have been 2 or 3 by half time. And once again, the goal just comes from someone takes out two players in the middle of the park. First of all, it's the throw-in. Someone boots a ball out for a throw-in that doesn't need to be booted out for a throw-in. And that's where it all comes from. And they just have too much space in the park. They pass it out wide. And initially, Liverpool do quite well to get the bodies back and make sure that they can't get past them. But then these triangles just happen and Liverpool can't get anywhere near. They're running around like headless chickens, and then a runner from deep goes in behind, and Eze is in an absolute acre of space in the middle of the box because no one's decided that that's a danger point. And I'm just, look, I have been and I've seen some of the best comebacks this season. Like, I've loved every minute. Like, Newcastle away was a joke. Wolves even early on in the season. But at some point, you are going to get undone because you're putting too much into the game. And we can speak about finishing, and the finishing was absolutely horrific. Mm. But there's a lot more pressure on you to finish your chances now, because it's not just one goal that you need. It's the fact of, oh my God, I need one goal before 70 here because I need another 20 minutes to get a goal. Yeah. And it just feels like the time is running out.
That's fine when there's no pressure on you finishing, when you believe you're going to score. Mm. But when you come off the back of a couple of games where you're a little unsteady as to how you who's going to be the one to stick the ball in the back of the net, who's making the right decisions, who, when the chips are down, can you give the ball to and stick it in, and the answer's no one. That's when that becomes a bit of a mountain problem. Now, I definitely felt that. And the first goal, Dan, it's like, or the goal, it's nice football from Palace. It's a very well worked goal, but it's another example of, it always feels like other teams have it easier. Find it easier to score against us than we do to score against them. We play nice passing triangles and we have movements and we have people to stretch, but I can't think of loads of situations where
someone cuts it back to our best player in 5 yards of space inside the 18-yard box?
Because it shouldn't be allowed to happen, basically. And for me, I'm with Chloe. That was my sort of biggest bugbear from the entire game. And obviously, as the game wears on, obviously, the what's coming back to haunt us at the minute is our lack of clinical nature in front of goal. And obviously, that's the case in this game as well. But we just can't keep starting games as slowly as we are doing. We're susceptible all
the
time.
They had two shots on goal before the first minute.
Well, Alison Becker's obviously back in the side yesterday for the first time in weeks. And I personally was thinking, okay, hopefully he's not too busy. Certainly for the first 10, 15 minutes, let him get a touch on the ball. Within the first 90 seconds, he's basically made two saves. You're like, oh, welcome back, Ali. What the fuck's going on here? Honestly, God. And the goal is a carbon copy. It's very similar to two goals we conceded in midweek, and you can't allow that to happen again. Obviously, the mood music and they're coming out. Virgil van Dijk is saying, we need to take responsibility, we need to show reaction. And then I've watched that 20 minutes, and I've seen that 20 minutes 15 times this season. And
21 times we've gone behind.
Yeah, exactly. The powers of recovery are one thing. We've all made jokes, we've all lauded the fact that a second half FC, you know, we'll give you a goal led start. Isn't it funny? Ultimately, it's going to come back and bite you on the arse.
It's a joke that's gotten less funny every time it's been told.
Yeah. It's like when Darwin Nunes missed a chance, isn't it? Yeah. You know, for a bit, it's funny because you go on to win the game. And then when you don't, you're like, oh, Darwin.
We're back to Kish from 2 months ago of like the, can we just stop chanting his name until he scores a goal?
I'm there, mate, honestly. He's exposed fucking two belters. Yeah, I'm player. Like, what? That's the difference.
I think the cop have decided to stop doing that because I didn't hear a chorus of Nunes at any point.
There was a few during the game, but like, it was nowhere near. It was nothing like the stadium. But then again, there was nothing. That's one of the that'll do for me. Like, the overall attitude toward the game, and I don't think it was from the fans. I've seen a lot of people going, no heart and blah, blah, blah. I think these are just lines that people trot out when you've not won. But actually, I thought that there wasn't enough heart in the stands. And I think there's too many. And I just want to expand on a point that I made in the post-match. I don't think I verbalised it very, very well. Because there's a temptation when you start to talk about who's in the ground and how they're reacting to stuff and how they're being, for this to somehow end up as like a stick to beat people who are coming from abroad or outside of Liverpool. And I want to make it unequivocal that I'm not saying that whatsoever, because there was a guy who came up to me post-match, and I don't know whether it was his first game at Anfield, but he'd made a long journey to come to the game, and his voice was gone. Because he'd spent the game absolutely belting every opportunity, every song he could possibly do, trying to get that out there. So I'm all here for that. But there's just a creeping sort of... There were 7 games left to go of the season. 7. Like, we were singing, we're going to win the league outside the ground in 13-14 around this time of the season when we beat Man City, you know what I mean? And it was an absolute bear pit Anfield at that time, because we had something to fight for, and I've not had that sense yet inside Anfield of, we're going for this title, we're fighting for it, we're going to do everything in our power to kind of make it sort of happen outside of the big games. And my slight concern is there's too many people there who are going along to these games because they want to just go and experience a Jurgen Klopp game of football, and there's a fine margin, and that's fine, and this is why, again, I need to be clear on the difference, because that is absolutely fine. If you've chosen this run-in to be the time that gives you the impetus to go and empty your bank account and get yourself in the ground because it's your lifelong ambition, then fucking have it, bring it on, and because they're probably not the people who are the issue here. But we were talking about a pre-game, and we had this in 13-14 when the coach greetings became a thing, and they were almost like a spontaneous thing where people just started turning up and singing and chanting. But the more they went on, the more people started to go to watch the coach being greeted rather than to greet the coach. Mm. And so many people were stood back, not singing, not getting involved, not making noise, not clapping, not cheering, and they were watching because it's a hell of a scene. By the way, you know, it's a hell of a thing to be a part of, but actually it's, you know, not enough people were involved in being a part of it. Too many people there who've gone along. And again, this is a slight issue right now, is that, yeah, the Klopp nostalgia, you know, leaving tour is threatening to sort of overwhelm. We've got a title to fight for here, you know, and I know a lot of people have talked about like the ticket price protests and all that. It's not, that's almost exists in separation. That's a separate issue, which I, you know, we should be protesting against the rising ticket prices. By the way, I don't think that's anywhere near as big an issue as, it's great if you bring, if you're coming along for your one big hit, who are you bringing with you? And is the person you're bringing with you on this lifelong journey bought in as much as you are, because if every single person brings someone with them who's not asked for it and it's just going along to support you in it, then have a little think about what we're doing. Because I was, yeah, and that's not just people outside Liverpool. I saw there were scousers around me who I'd never seen before who were just shouting angry shit, you know what I mean, instead of like getting singing songs and getting behind the team. It was a weird old vibe for me anyway in the game. Anyone else?
Like the Norm style flashbacks that Virgil van Dijk gave me.
Oh yeah, wow.
Oh, good God.
Wowzer.
Yeah. Did not need to feel that. Did not need that dredging back up.
No. Good point, actually. Yeah, good
horrible,
point
made. Horrible sort of 15 minutes where that's all I could think about. That definitely affected the atmosphere because everyone just went, oh my God. Oh my God, not again. Fucking hell.
That's a good point. Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah. It's
no, a big thanks. One. The profligacy in front of goal. I mean, they were going to. It's that's the biggest issue amongst all this, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because ultimately, you know, whether you're at it or not, I don't like saying this, but like Premier League champions find a way of winning these type of games, and we weren't able to do so. That's not through the lack of trying, that's not through the lack of creating moments or opportunities to do so, but for whatever reason right now, our entire front line, which we've whacked Liverpool about all season, is not firing all cylinders. Well, not even a couple of cylinders.
Can we segue this into a Mohamed Salah chat? Because he's doing my fucking head in, and I love him, and he's, you know, he doesn't even need saying that he's going to go down on the list of the greatest players ever to play for Liverpool, and that list is distinguished, to say the very least. But he's been crap for a few weeks.
He looks old.
I'm transposing a bit of myself and that, because I feel old right now going through some stuff, not feeling my young vital self. Whether it's how he's being used, I don't know. Whether it's a little bit in his own head, is it, you know, the physicality of it catching up? I honestly don't know. But he's been crap. Like, really disappointingly so. And, you know, I heard you before in the office kind of sort of talking around this point, Chloe, but I don't think the other players we've got in attack are good enough to carry the attack without having somewhat of Salah's quality in there. And I think you can get away with it for a spell. But you know, I said this the other week about how I felt like the injuries at Old Trafford, the injuries finally caught up with us, because when you've got the more top quality players you've got available to you, the more chances you've got of winning games, because top quality players win games on their own. And there's a little bit right now where we managed to get through, and we did brilliantly to get through. We could really do with 30 goal a season forward starting to score goals again, because Darwin's Darwin. He's just going to do what he does. He's going to have his contribution. Diaz is in brilliant form, generally speaking, as well. And Jota's just coming back from injury. And I know Salah is too. So he's going to get as much length of rope as he needs, really. You know what I mean? But yeah, Darwin and Diaz aren't prolific enough to have a non-prolific struggler Mohamed Salah alongside them is my thing with him.
You're right, and I kind of said very similar heading into yesterday's game, unfortunately, because I think both Darwin, I'd sort of categorise Darwin and Mo ever so slightly together, albeit obviously Mo is far better when it comes to his output, but I think both of them are in a bit of a lull right now in terms of their confidence in front of goal. They're not quite sharp, not quite at it, and Darwin Nunes goes through these peaks and troughs, and we're well aware of that by this point already. But you're right, when they're not playing well and then not producing a good difference to goal, having a Luis Diaz, who I believe is playing very well at the moment, he isn't the output guy. So if you're relying on him to get your assists and your goals, you're onto a losing battle, because that doesn't work. Obviously, you mentioned there, Jota's just coming back, and it was selling towards the back end of that game when Gakpo comes on. I thought he was brilliant at midweek as well. Cody Gakpo, actually, he was brilliant when he came on yesterday. Felt like in the final, the closing stages of 10, 15 minutes, whatever it was, if we were to get a chance, I wanted to fall to Cody Gakpo. And I would not have been saying that a week ago. But he feels like the one at the minute who kind of is the hot hand. He is kind of confident, and he is actually playing the best football out of a lot of them. And that says all you need to know about Mo Salah, Darwin Nunes, Jota back from injury, etc. Because, they're not at it, any of them. And Salah, my biggest problem with Salah yesterday and of late, really, Obviously, in front of goal is one thing, but I could put that down a little bit to fine margins. His effort yesterday is on target. The defender gets back well. Credit to him for that. He doesn't connect with it anywhere near the way he'd like to. But it's the fundamentals of Salah's game right now that aren't working either. Even his touch is off.
Yeah.
Like his, and that is not Mo Salah. Yeah. That is not something you'd normally say about him. That's unheard of in Mo Salah's game. So that, to me, is probably the biggest red flag. That's most alarming because the simple things that he does in his sleep 99% of the time isn't happening right now.
I asked a question on the fan away before. I think it'd be interesting to ask you. If there was a chance to fall to anyone in our starting 11 at the moment, who do you want it to fall to?
In our starting 11 from yesterday?
For Alisson Becker at this point,
Can I'd still be Alexis McAllister?
Yeah.
If we had that if they had that chance Palace had yesterday, I'd want Alexis McAllister arriving. Mm. Although I don't think he's been great the past couple of games, it's still him.
Yeah.
I'd still
it's mad that though, isn't it? When you consider the forward players that we've got and you know how good they've been for the rest of the season.
No one went bang. Like there's the obvious answer. And the obvious answer is still Salah, isn't it? You know what I mean? You probably would still double down on him because he's Mo Salah, but right now
it's not as easy as it should be.
It's just that I feel there's a weird imbalance in what we're doing at the minute, and I think Salah and Darwin are just a huge part of it, because I don't quite know where Salah's meant to play. You know, he doesn't really make the pitch huge anymore. You know, he seems to be tucking in to get a little bit closer to goal, and that was working at the start of the season. Get close to Darwin because he causes so many issues that someone will bobble off him and it'll drop to you. But I do also think that we were hitting upon something that's just make Darwin the main man. Mm-hmm. Just have him be the guy, make everything go through him rather than him trying to link everything together for us. And now Salah's back in the team and Darwin's like, oh yeah, right, I've got to be the guy to lay him in again. And there's a little, it hasn't felt as fluid, but I think between the two of them in the last month or two. Now it could just be chalked down to, again, Salah coming back from injury, you know, for the first time really since the Champions League final in 2018. Like, you know what I mean, that's the most serious injury he's had since then, and he's also what, 6 years older, you know, so there's definitely something in that. But it's frustrating because you know they can do it. Like, you know this team needs Alisson, Van Dijk, Trent and Salah to be on it, because they're our world class footballers. And I mean, to be fair, we've missed three of them for a good old chunk of the campaign.
Yeah, but we were really good when Salah was at AFCON. Like, and we were shitting ourselves about that, about what we were going to do on that right-hand side. But it goes back to your point. We made it work because there was a focal point to the attack, wasn't there? Yeah. I think that's what, there was a freedom for those players to know that I can play, I'm going to get a few games, we'll get a bit of rhythm together and all that type of stuff. And, you know, we saw Diaz out there on the right-hand side and he played really well there and stuff. Whereas Salah, for me, yesterday, inside, in between the centre half and the left back, all of the first half, as soon as Conor Bradley goes off on 48 or whatever, Trent goes straight into the midfield and Salah's asked to do a completely different job, and the entire team's asked to do a completely different job because Trent's on the field all of a sudden. Now that change, if it's made at half time, it's easy to communicate to the team, but made on 48, it's not an easy thing to communicate, right? The whole game plan is now changing. We're doing this. We actually played better second half. We created the chances. You know, there was a Nunes one where he blanded at the goalkeeper from close range. Can't really put any blame on Nunes for that one. He does as well as he can do. There was one where
I was waiting for someone to react to that. I'm sorry.
Sure.
I'm with you, by the way. I don't blame Nunes whatsoever, but loads do.
It was brilliant.
It's a brilliant save.
Carragher, by the way, on comms, just quickly on that, said he has to score that. I don't know what else he can do. I don't know what else Darwin
can do. Put it a bit more in the corner.
But ultimately, he's not even looking. He has no idea where to keep it.
I thought he'd done really well.
Yeah, he connects with it perfectly. I'm fine with it, by the way. I know you were going
to
say
something. I'm more annoyed at the one where he decided not to pass to Salah when he was by the goalkeeper and decided to chip it over to Diaz.
Yeah.
Again, just a stupid mistake by Nunes in that instance. You know, there's the Salah one where Mitchell gets across. What can you do? The defender's got across. It's brilliant. There were so many of them where you're just like, for a team that played so badly with the ball, we created so many opportunities. Well, it was ridiculous.
That was my thing. And it was one of the things I was trying to stress post-match, was the idea of being angry about it. You can be angry because you feel your feelings when they happen, but to keep up a sense of anger is performative, I think, after the fact, because in reality, you go back and watch the chances that we had. There's a couple that are annoying in isolation. So Curtis Jones going clean through and putting it wide is annoying. But like,
I've seen people miss them all. People do miss them. Centre forwards miss them. I can be annoyed at it, but that's what they want. But Endo hits the crossbar. He's the defensive midfielder, comes up and takes a swing at one and hits the crossbar. The Dean Henderson save from Luis Diaz in the first half is outrageous. Like, I mean, that's as good as Alisson's one in the second half. It's a pure instinctive. He's got his arm in the way of it. He shouldn't be saving that. There's the one that you mentioned there from the save from the Darwin Núñez shot, close range, swivels, gets an instinctive shot out. That's centre forward.
He does.
There's no doubt that's going into the goal. It's a really good save from there. You mentioned the Tarik Mitchell block. There's another.
Jota's probably the biggest chance out of all these, I'd say.
Yeah. Players.
I'm aware Diogo Jota's just coming back. I'm fully on board with that. However,
yeah,
if you're fit enough to be on that pitch, mate, and you are Diogo Jota, who is renowned for being that cool guy in front of the goal, just finish it. Like, really, you have time to pick your spot. That one, and I love him to pieces, and I don't even want to say the words, but that is relatively unforgivable, I would say, because he has to score. Like, Darwin Núñez, for me, does everything right. Salah, one of them, defender gets across. But when the keeper is nowhere to be seen, and Diogo Jota literally has the goal at his mercy, you have to pick a spot. You can't hit defender in those instances. So that's the one that really stings for me.
Yeah, but it's to the point, on the flip side of that, it's a defender putting his body on the line and putting a block in. So, like, you know, I'm going to keep praise on Andy Robertson getting back and clearing one off the line. You know, it's not quite that level of absolute exceptionalness.
But Nathaniel Clan stands still and Jota just sits around him.
Yeah.
There's a difference there. He's not moving.
He has
not
enough
Mitchell
goal.
Gets across and gets his body to it. Robertson runs back and gets to it. Nathaniel Clan's standing there still. Although I do want to hear what Chloe thinks of the Darwin Núñez chance now.
Same.
Just fucking score. Any one of you, put your chances away. I'm sick and tired of it.
But of the just fucking score ones,
there's about Jota, seven where you just need to score.
The Jota one and the Curtis Jones one are much more. Just stick it in that Darwin Núñez one by a million
there's
miles.
There's one also in the first. Before they score a goal, Robertson does absolutely phenomenal down the left hand side with Luis Diaz. And to sum up, Darwin Núñez is we play brilliantly and he's in on goal and I just need him to cut it across and take it further in, and he decides to shoot first time from an impossible angle where the only possible part he can do is put it near post right where the goalkeeper is, and that's just your decision making being crap, and that is on you, that's not on anyone else. All you have to do is cut across. You've got the pace, the lad's done a ball into you, all you need to do is get goal side, which you've done. Just make sure that no one can make a foul on you and no one can close the angle down, but instead he shoots first time and it's really annoying because it's a great opportunity. And I thought we started slow, but we actually created two big chances in that, and that for me is one where if you've just got better decision making, you're taking it across and you're actually just getting a simple goal there. But you're not, because for some reason you're not in the headspace to be making those decisions. Goals, which I need them to score. Curtis Jones should score. There's one where Curtis Jones and Jota get in each other's way. That should be a goal. There are many chances there, and I know we can all say, look, the defenders have done well, but you've got to find ways, because that's what wins your titles. And I just thought there was too many massive chances where we've just not connected well, or, you know, we've got in each other's way. And like you said there, the Robbo one where all he needs to do is just, Darwin Núñez, just drag the defender away, lad, so that Salah or you have got to tap in. And it's like, why is no one's head switched on in these moments?
That's the problem with it, by the way, is it becomes this negative spiral of the pressure ramps up with everyone and your decision making that's already not. I mean, you mentioned Isak, someone said you mentioned them a bit on the final word show. When someone's just got a clarity of thought in front of them, you're running in on goal to stick the ball in the back of the net. There's a simplicity to all of that. Whereas when you know, it goes back to the Man United now games where it's in people's head that we need to take these chances, because if we don't take these chances, we're not gonna win the games, and if we don't win the games, then we can't win the title and we can't win trophies. And then what happens is, of course, that was in the heads of the people in the ground as well. And again, you could hear it. That was the most hostile environment towards our own players I've heard all season in a long old while, because of that pure, like, just shouting, angry response to them missing it, because we did. We're taking it personally. And Chloe's the prime example of that, of like, now we go to the point where we can't differentiate between what's a good chance and what's a bad miss, you know, and everything in between. So yeah, they're doing their heads, and that goes back to the Salah thing. Salah's meant to be our cool head. He was meant to just be able to stride in and just, I'm going to score and we'll sort the rest out after that. Well, he's not doing that, and we know what Darwin Nunes is. Darwin Nunes is a fucking mad as a box of frogs, isn't he? And you know, Diaz has got the ability to crop up again. That was the most, if he'd scored that one in the first half, that was actually what the Luis Diaz goal's starting to look like, isn't it? Him just acrobatically getting on scraps in the box and sticking them away. But yeah, I it's hard to disagree with the idea of getting wound up by it, because it contributes towards Liverpool not getting the result and who you're meant to get angry at. You can't really get angry at the goalie. You can't, because he's done his job. I don't think Konate was very good, but I think that was as much to do with how they set up against us as Konate himself. Konate had the ball all day long, because what's he going to do? Is he gonna put a raking 70-yard pass across the pitch to someone in space? No. Is he gonna pick out a pinpoint first time speedy ball through a line of three of their players exactly to feet? No, he's not gonna do it. Fine, let him have the ball and let him make a bit of a tit of himself. Same with Endo as well. So it's on. Yeah, there's other players you needed to step up. I want to talk Sabo.
Yeah.
I don't know what to do with Dominic Szoboszlai at this point. I could really do with him being better, to be perfectly honest, because I think most people, Chris, would have hauled Curtis Jones in the game. Now, obviously, Szobo comes on for Endo at halftime. It's a positive move. But he's had weeks back in the team now, and there's still moments where you go, okay, yeah, I get it, but my overall feeling on him is it's not been great. Whereas Curtis Jones nearly stunk the gaff out, but actually, and again, to Chloe's point, he misses probably the biggest chance of the whole game. But when you watch it back, him drifting into the 10-4 was a real positive in terms of our attack. I thought he managed to keep his game ticking over quite nicely, whereas I don't really know what to do with Szoboszlai.
Yeah, I don't know. I think I think we just got the midfield all wrong from the word go. In the first half, you know, McAllister was dropping deep, whereas I think it comes back to it, and something me and Steve were talking about on the final word, is when you're playing with Bradley and Robertson, you've not got an inverted midfielder there. And we were kind of, they went man for man on us in the middle of the park. So they made it really difficult to play to any of the midfielders. Jones was on an island. McAllister was dropping deep alongside Endo. And then you're begging for that fourth play that you've had all season long in there to go, okay, we're going to just go one more than them in the middle of the park. And then when he made the Endo sub, obviously McAllister then dropped deep. He's been excellent further forwards, and I don't think he was having a good game, McAllister, and I don't think he had a particularly good game against Atalanta either, but you still get the occasional ball over the top, like to Darwin Nunes, where he should have squared it.
The fade he puts on those passes over the top.
It's unbelievable. Like, it's Pirlo-esque, isn't it, the way that he kicks the ball sometimes. So when Szoboszlai comes in, you're in a midfield that's kind of getting used to the fact that McAllister's back in at this in the six, and Jones has been on an island, not really got himself into the game. Szoboszlai comes in, links up quite well with Trent on the right-hand side and Salah at times, but doesn't really have the impact going forward. He's not like a Martin Odegaard who's going to thread the ball through to a striker. Well, what type of midfielder is he? As you know, when you think about midfielders, you always compare them to previous players you've seen, because it's the easiest thing for your brain to get around. I don't know who to compare Dominic Szoboszlai to.
Marco Grujic at this point.
Well,
just wants to have the ball drop to him.
To Frank Lampard.
Yeah, just wants to have the ball drop to him on the edge of the penalty area so he can whack a shot towards goal. Whereas actually, again, systemically, when Trent inverts and Salah tucks in, he should be creating the way. He should be going around the outside and using his pace and really stretching teams.
And he started to do it. He got the ball over the top, didn't he? He plays a ball across the box and there's no one there for it. And you know, there's a couple of times when he does it, but I just don't know. I don't know what his fit is. I think he'd be best on the left, to be honest, so at least he can cut in and shoot. Whereas if he's on the right, you're taking shooting almost off the table for him, and it's a bit like, well, if that's what he wants to do, why don't you put him in a position where he can do it?
I was very surprised at half time Harvey Elliott did not come on that football pitch. I was even more surprised when he got about 10 minutes of that. He's been one of our best players this season, specifically our best sub, if I'm being honest. And that entire first half, you said the man marked us, they did, and not a single one of our players wanted to drift and try and get the ball and find the space. Well, that's exactly what Harvey Elliott does. Yeah. Harvey Elliott scans, find the spaces and goes and drops into that space. And I just felt like we needed them from half time. The entire cop behind me were talking about, get Harvey Elliott on, he's gonna drift into those places where he can pick up the ball on the half turn because he's found the space. And I thought we really, really missed him. We brought Sobo on, and to be fair, he should have an assist. I think, is it Jota? Is that the one that...
Yeah, that was Jota as well.
It's
yeah,
Jota. That was so he has one where I think Jota and Curtis get stuck in each other's way, and then there's the one where Jota just misses. So to be fair, he should have potentially two assists. But for me, when he came on, I totally understood it, but a part of me was saying, what has Harvey Elliott got to do to get onto this football pitch? Because he was my go-to lad in that situation at half-time. He was the one who I just needed, especially with how well he interacts with that right-hand side, with Bradley and Salah, because Salah, obviously, he went a bit narrower, and then when Sobo came on, he has to go back out wide again. So the fact that Sobo, at one part, was our best midfielder, and now he's gone to the point where I need Harvey Elliott on before him, which, you know, that's not against Harvey Elliott. He's just, you know, the lads, Sobo's won things. He's captain of Hungary. He's captain of his national team. And yeah, I just don't know what I'm going to get with Dominic Szoboszlai. I know I'm going to get the energy, but I mean, he stunk the gaff out midweek as well. I just don't know what I'm getting with him.
The thing for me that was mad, I disagree on the Elliott thing at half time. I thought Trent was the substitution for Endo, because you were naturally the game was going to go on. We were going to end up with Trent in midfield anyway, because that's been the break glass when Trent's been fit.
Yep.
You start him at right back, Fulham. You know, you move him into midfield and you let him have a bit more free reign. And I thought when he doesn't come on, he's obviously not fit enough for it. And then 3 minutes later, Bradley's injured and he's on the pitch. He's on the pitch anyway. We didn't need Endo in that game. And it's sometimes, and we haven't needed him actually for the last three. You know, we've not needed that kind of football. Or maybe we have. It's just, we've certainly not needed the performance that he's put in. We've needed either a super dominant guy, someone to be a bit better, or we've needed a better ball player. And he's been neither of those things for us. So yeah, get Trent on and just allow us to have a bit more creativity from a little bit deeper and keep McAllister where he is. But obviously when you don't go with that, you go with Szoboszlai, and he's clearly, I think he's just trying to play him into form. Yeah. I think, you know, and you would, because he's got everything. You know, he's 6'1", 6'2", he's got all the pace, he's got the shot, he's got the vision, he's almost a total package. So it does make sense to try and play him in there. But I don't disagree with the point that Harvey Elliott should be on the pitch for longer, because he makes stuff happen for us that other footballers don't.
And it's hard to disagree with that given the season that he's had and the impact he's had on games. You have to look as far back as Crystal Palace, the reverse fixture of Selhurst Park, and see that. So yeah, I wouldn't have been against more Harvey Elliott whatsoever, because he has been outstanding when he has been called upon. Having said that, your point there about Szoboszlai's form, and I guess the way to look at it is, with someone like Szoboszlai, he is kind of the perfect halfway house between your Vitória Endo and your Harvey Elliott, because he offers that physicality and that defensive side of things, as well as all the attacking prowess that he has. So I'm still a big fan of his. I agree, he's absolutely not in the best of form. Nothing like he was start of the season, a million miles away from it, to be honest. But when Klopp makes a substitution like that and he goes something like Dom Szoboszlai, he probably is trying to get him back into form. But also, I imagine, you know, he's almost picturing the best version of Dom Szoboszlai playing in that game. He's not expecting him to go out there and not exactly be at it. He's thinking, if you're at it and you play the way I know you can, the way you were really on the season, you're going to be the key to unlocking this game. You could be a real difference maker and a game changer.
Yeah.
So that's the way I look at it. He's not thinking, oh, go on, Dom, I know you're not really playing very well at the minute, but let's just see what happens. He's thinking, yeah, okay, I'm backing you 100%. Yeah. Go out there, put in a performance.
And there is that thing that we touched upon that, you know, if Bradley comes off at half time and you make that change, you know, we're trying for Bradley at half time, then you've had time to tell everyone where they're going to be. Whereas Szoboszlai's probably being told, here you are, you've got 10 minutes of like intensive, here's what's expected from you, here's what your role is going to be. And then 3 minutes into the half, he's being asked to do something completely different, because the guy behind him is in a different position. I'll make, you know, positive cases for everyone all day long, because I see no sound point not to, but I am a little, I don't know, it does feel like we've kind of almost had the best of him out, we're going to get out of him this season. I don't know whether he just needs a big old rest or we need to play him into form, but there's a worrying number of footballers, and I don't know what the answer is with that. some of them just need to keep playing, and some of them need to be taken out of the firing line. But that's an important balance.
It all comes back to the injuries that we've had so far this season, because we've got lads who've played far too many minutes recently, playing with lads who they've not played with in a while, who they haven't got that chemistry with, who aren't playing particularly well. So it is just the injuries catching up on us, I'm sure of that. It's why we're creating chances, but we're not fluid with it. We're not looking like a dominant side at the moment, are we, Dan?
No, far from it, to be honest with you. I think Diaz is probably the case in point when it comes to playing too many minutes, isn't he? He has been absolutely flogged of late. So, yeah, I make you absolutely spot on.
And McAllister as well.
McAllister's fallen.
Endo's played a lot of minutes. He looks tired.
Catching up with Emerson. And it's not just physically as well, but it's mentally draining too, because of all the pressures we've spoken about. And the magnitude of every single game we're going into at the moment, the stakes, you know, have never been higher for some of these lads, really, have they? So it is that important. And it must feel like every single game, every single decision they make, it's got so much importance placed upon it. And when they are going wrong, to the point you made earlier, Paul, about like when you are missing chances, you can feel the outside noise really piling up on you, and then you miss the next chance and the next chance. You must be almost desperate for the next one not to fall to you. You think, I hope it goes somebody else and they just score, because I don't need this.
It's such a nervousness in the ground at the moment.
You can tell.
Well, it felt this last few games just felt the most like last season to me. Where that thing, and I think that's a great point of that, of it, and I'm not saying anyone's hiding exactly, because I wouldn't want to go out on a limb and say something so horrendously negative with nothing more than feelings to back it up. But I have a couple of times this gone, they just look a bit done in, you're right, this dominant thing. And it was one of the things I said post-match, is that it feels like we need a bit of luck and a bit of magic and whatever to get us over the line. And that, in that regard, it feels much more 13-14 than it feels 18-19 or 19-20 or whatever, where the great Klopp teams had the ability to just control football. We had the ability to control goals going in. You know, the Champions League final, we go a goal up and we go, that'll do us.
Yeah,
and then we get a chance to stick one away later on and put the game to bed. But great.
But nothing happened in between.
Well, exactly.
Yeah. We're not polished right now. We know that.
Yeah, exactly. And some of that is just a lack of the availability of personnel. We keep talking about this and it gets oversight. But, you know, there's a lot of games lately where we've started Conor Bradley and Jarrell Quanta, who were playing League One football last season. And that's not to say they're not good enough. They are. But they're young lads just making their way in the game. This is not like generationally talented Trent Alexander-Arnold playing at fullback with Joel Matip inside him and a, you know, 28-year-old Virgil van Dijk and Alisson and Pete Robertson and all that kind of, and everything else that goes with that Liverpool team. And bear in mind also, what we class as a workhorse midfield in front of them, it is a different.
But it works so well.
Yeah, but we're not that team, are we? And that's the frustration with that. So when if people aren't confident and they aren't firing, and if that attitude of, oh God, I hope he sticks it away, well, that's why we need Salah, because Salah will just stick away. But if he's not sticking it away, and like Virgil van Dijk's not scoring town and headers for us at the moment, and Trent's only just got on the pitch for the first time in 2 months or whatever, so he's not had enough time to, is that, even Alisson didn't get a chance to head one back across with that when he came up for the free kick at the end. There is that sort of creeping in. I really hope it's not the beginning of the end, but it is just something that we can turn around in the next week.
I think so. I think the timeline of that's really interesting as well, because it does feel, certainly second half yesterday, when the game did sort of descend into a little bit of chaos, that suited us more. And that sort of speaks to heavy metal football that obviously Klopp first brought to us, because that, we felt like the best way of us winning the game of football, when it is just a little bit mad and we concede chances and teams attack us and vice versa, get a bit basketball-y. That at the moment feels like our best chance to sort of run the way we game of footy, because we don't have the ability to completely control proceedings like we have done in the past, whereby, you're right, we used to just keep the ball and it felt like even as you got towards sort of the end of a game, we're just going to score eventually. That's not the case right now with us. We need that mayhem in order to get the best out of us.
It feels like at times you just need a deflected shot or just an error from the opposition, to be perfectly honest. That's what it feels like, because once you get, I go back to Fulham in the EFL Cup, and it was a Curtis Jones deflected shot that just wrong-footed the goalkeeper, it went in, and that was, okay, well, we're going to go and get the winner now. And I feel like at times you just need that bit of luck, and we didn't have that bit of luck. I mean, some of the clearances were incredible, some of the misses were absolutely mad. The thing about it is that, like you mentioned there with the atmosphere, I've gone into every game feeling like, boss, like, I can't wait to get inside this ground, and the atmosphere is kind of being like everyone's petrified, and it's like maybe it's because no one expects us to be in this situation. Maybe no one actually believes we're good. You've said there we're the third best team, and I agree with that. Maybe everyone else thinks that. I don't really know, but I just expected a bit more, especially with Atalanta midweek as well. Like, a lot of people should have used the, you know, whether they were happy or whether they thought 2% or whatever wasn't a lot or a big change, either use it as anger to make sure you sing louder, or if it doesn't bother you, then just shut up and support the Reds, then get behind the team. And I don't know what's going on with the atmosphere, because around me it actually feels all right in the game. But once again, I'm stood on the cop and I'm surrounded by people who I know, who I've known for the last 6 years and went to the game with. So, like, I know the people around me were midweek for Atalanta. I had people who I didn't know next to me, and there was just a lot of negativity
the thing
from
is,
nowhere.
The couple sing all game long. It's just but it's not being picked up on by around the ground. And this is the problem with Atalanta, is that we go to quarter final. It's a quarter final. If it was a quarter final of the Champions League, we'd be well more up for it. But there is always this thing in our mentality, and it's been there as long as I've been a Liverpool fan, of there's just games of football. And the problem is, we're in the business end of the season now, and we've got a lot of just games of football left to play against just teams that we should be better than on our day. And, you know, almost we need a little bit, and this is where you need something from the players on the pitch sometimes. You mean, that Atalanta game, that was crying out for someone in a red shirt to just go and do something. You know what I mean? It sounds stupid, but it's like that's a James Milner just going and putting a reducer in on someone,
had,
kind of thing.
We
like,
had,
you know,
that opportunity with the Robertson clearance. That would normally be
the spark,
and it got loud, obviously, for Robbo, but it just dissipated, just vanished again straight after.
Yeah, and it's because we're all hinged now on this. Like, it's again, it's the success. It's almost like needing the success to happen, but not wanting to contribute towards it with everything that we sort of got. And, you know, and I said this, like, I'm not a song starter. I never have been. But I'll sing any song that's sung around me, and I'll give it all I can. But it's weird. You can feel the feels and inevitability sometimes in football matches, and I don't know what that is, or how you change that. And they're the games where I don't know what it is. It's an intangible moment. It is just something. And look, and I think it is. I think fear is the right thing. I think people do fear the worst, because it's all well and good. You can make your peace with Jurgen Klopp leaving if you think we're gonna go and win a title, or we're gonna go and win a Europa League, and you can start to go, because it's like part of your acceptance. Whereas we might have to accept that Jurgen Klopp's won his last trophy for Liverpool, and this season's just gonna be a season. Just going to be a fine, you know, top four and a trophy is an absolutely sound season for any football club. It's not going to be a legendary season or whatever. But how do we square that away and still manage to enjoy the football and support the team along the way? And I don't quite know what the answer is to that. Hopefully this was that sort of tipping point where it's kind of like, kind of got to shrug it off, and because I agree with this thing. City could just win every game now and it won't matter. None of it will matter, but it all matters, because it's an opportunity to go, you know, we'll go and watch football,
I think there's a fear, there's a nervousness inside the ground about, you know, not being able to win the league and stuff like that. But that's because what it comes down to is, you said at the top of the show, it's pastime. It's supposed to be there to enjoy ourselves. You know, I've stood next to each of you on the cop or in a game. Like, I like to fucking go and sing. I love to watch the footy. The result is obviously important, but it is about the journey. It is about the moment. It's not just about the trophies at the season. It's about meeting your mates and having a pint or a drink with them, and, you know, having fun at the footy and chatting about it and everything else. And yet there's this online thing where everything is all geared towards a trophy at the end of the season. And I don't know whether that's right or wrong, to be honest with you. Maybe they're right and I'm wrong, but I still enjoy going to watch football. I still enjoy going to sing, you know, wanting to see these incredible things that the lads do on the field for you. And I want to be a part of those big atmospheres and stuff. And, you know, it's a long season. It is difficult. Like, it's hard for them. It's hard for fans. It's been a lot of games we've had this season, but right now is where we should be at our loudest at all times.
What I will say is, because I know a lot of people will start blaming all different sets of fans here, but for me, fans can just get complacent, and that is what it is. Whether you've been there every single game and you just think that the Europa League's not on because it's not the Champions League, so you're not up for it as much, or, you know, whether you come in because, like you mentioned earlier, the Jürgen Klopp factor, whatever reason it is, fans can just get complacent. And you can kind of, we've been really lucky with the fact that we've been able to watch a Jürgen Klopp team that's brought us so much success. And when that stops happening, or, you know, you have seasons where that's just the norm now, so, like, I don't even need to bother, actually. And that is the problem, I think, because I go there, like you said, I scream my heart out. The people around me think, Jesus Christ, not here again. Because, like, I'll join in with absolutely every song there is. I've been saying it for months. We've needed a song to bounce us into, and we've not had that song.
It's not appealing,
and people can say it's Diaz's song. It's not. We don't even sing half the words, the lyrics. And it's just that one little round that goes for 2 minutes. We needed something to give us that extra bounce inside the stadium. And I just think, no matter,
it's coming from Atalanta when we went for it, by the way.
I think at times we can just get a bit complacent in the fact that you've seen some of the greatest moments under Jürgen Klopp,
but does that,
and you just expect that now.
There's that, but also I think there's a bit like, there's too many people who've booked the travel to Dublin who are fucking dead annoyed now that they've wasted the money if they can't get stuff back, because it was such a shoo-in that was going to happen. And there's too many people who've booked hotels and travel for Liverpool for the final game of the season, and they're more arsed about losing out on this kind of experience, which we all are in our own way. If it doesn't get there, but it's an added pressure, you know. And again, and it's not like complacency in the same way. It's not like the players are necessarily that complacent or whatever. Because look, Atalanta just put a great game plan together, and we just didn't know how to cope with it. That happens in football. But I do think there's a lot of, like, I can pull from a load of different myriad sort of areas. I mentioned, like, the Klopp farewell thing of, you know, are people, is everyone in the ground all pulling towards this? I'm not entirely certain. Are there a bunch of people there again? Because the guys around me have been talking about it for weeks. Like, I've heard so many different ways to get over to Dublin, and mad little diddles on flights to various places and all that, because we're old. And I mean, Dad, you've had your travel book for
time.
8 months or whatever
eight
at
months.
This point.
Eight
you
months.
Know, and... cool, because you also, you've got to put your trust in Liverpool. So, and if you don't do it early, you won't get to do it at all. So that you do have to plan ahead. But then this is the problem: is that when when people's heads are already there, you're losing something you never had. You know, we're mourning the loss of something that wasn't ours. We haven't earned the right to be in a fucking Europa League final. We haven't earned the right to have a last day shootout in a Premier League title yet. We've got to get to there. So, like, when we're losing it, we're fearful of it all coming crashing down, and that's adding, I think, to the stress and the anxiety.
Can I just say one more thing on that? Because I did say all of that, but on Thursday, it does work the other way at times as well. I need that Liverpool side needed to give us something, because the first 20, the atmosphere was absolutely sound against Atalanta, and then it died. Yeah. At some point, Liverpool also need to give the fans something to get behind, and I think we had that against Crystal Palace, because we had the chances. You had that Robbo moment, but on Thursday, I don't think we had a single moment where the players helped the crowd get up for it either. So I am well aware this can happen both ways.
Right, let's try and part some positives before we head to the break. Andy Robertson was excellent.
He
was,
loved it.
Superb.
Exactly. One-man show for a bit.
It was very much a one-man show for a bit. Everything that we were doing down that left-hand side that was involving him was brilliant. I mean, you know, he makes that run, I think it's the one you mentioned before, actually does that sort of 1-2 with Diaz. He ends up inside, doesn't he? Plays it out to Nunes, who then shoots from the corner of the penalty area for some reason. But Andy Robertson was brilliant in that.
Take your shots early as a striker. Come on. There we are. 101 shots. They were keen to mention on Match of the Day.
Is that how many he's had this season? 101?
Well, at that point.
Oh, wow. Okay.
He had at least another one when he hit it against Dean Henderson, Chloe.
Really happy about it.
He looks fit, he looks fresh, he looks fast as well.
Yeah.
At the moment, Andy Robertson, doesn't he? So yeah, bit of a breath of fresh air from the starters. He was the best player. And then I think from the subs, Gakpo was the best player.
Yeah,
Cody Gakpo was another one, totally agree. There's something about him, you were talking about like players doing something on the pitch. Gakpo's the only one against Atalanta, particularly in the first half. My only issue with him in that game was that he was playing left wing, and all his best work was done in the 10 or in the 9, drifting inside. But That's definitely something from this. Is a week or two ago, I was very much like, I don't know what we've just had with Szoboszlai. I wasn't really sure what was going on with Gakpo. He didn't look the same player from last year. He just looks like someone's lit a fire under him, and that was another real positive performance from him, Con.
Yeah, it was. As soon as he came on, you just saw it. I think the entire cop was just shouting for the ball to go out wide to Gakpo because he was beating his man time and time again, and he was putting some decent balls in the box where Liverpool, if they just get on the second ball that just drops within the you know penalty box, you know you've got a tap in there, but unfortunately for us it was very much Anderson hoofing balls away at the second drop down, but yeah, he just had his man every single time. He was going both wide on his left foot. He was not afraid to, you know, put it on his weaker foot, but also he was cutting back on the right hand side. I thought him and Robbo were great down that left hand side, and like you said earlier on, actually if we could have got him nearer to the penalty box actually and got him on the end of one of these shots, potentially he could have scored. But yeah, I've been very impressed with him the last couple of games. He came on against United and I thought he was really good when he came on against them as well. Atalanta, he was one of the only, if not the only, spark in that team. And he's making a shout to actually be in that front line right now for me, because I kind of want to see what he does from the start, and maybe he can be a bit more clinical than the rest of them.
It feels that we have this every season. It happens in football, and with Jurgen Klopp teams, it tends to come later on in the campaign, because I think he has a great way of getting buy-in from lads who, in most of the teams, would recognise, there's nothing I can do to get into the first 11 here. But everyone buys into this collectivism, and, you know, I work hard in training and it all contributes to it, and then my chance might come later on. But, like, I was a bit worried that Gakpo had kind of fallen into that. It's what I call, in recent times, is probably like the Shaqiri mould, or a bit of a Rigi, where you're like, well, what am I doing here? The best I can ever hope for is a place on the subs bench. But it does feel like someone's just reminded Gakpo that there's lots of football still to be played, and there's going to be lots of opportunities, and maybe actually Jota coming back in, because there's a little point to be made there where everyone knows what Jota brings to the team, and Gakpo's become a little bit obtuse what exactly is he does for us. So, you know, whatever it is, long may it continue, because he's all of a sudden made himself a really useful option. If
he looks most likely to make something happen at the minute when he's on the pitch, to be honest with you. And I know it's only a very small sample size, we're not too far removed from him looking like he's in a little bit of a crisis of confidence, but that seems to have been shaken off immediately, and I think he's been brilliant the past couple of games. And then I guess the difficulty for him is where he plays still, because a lot of this good football's come from sort of the left-hand side. I know you're right, I think he's popped in centrally and cutting on that right foot really, really well. But right now, you know, heading into the Atlanta game, which we'll talk about obviously in more detail in a minute, like, he has put himself well in contention for a start there, because he's been the pick in two games of footy now for us, so can't argue.
It's true. Another positive is it wasn't just Darwin Nunes missing shots the weekend.
Is everyone?
Yeah.
Is that a positive? Shared
them round.
Well, yeah, you know what? Look, I know you obviously, yeah. Ha ha ha. But that my big thing on all this is that I'm well aware I said something very similar after we drew with Fulham in the opening game of the last season, that what's the odds that so many world-class players will have an off game again? And then basically that was the season. Entire season. I would suggest that if this was one of those games where we'd completely ended up devoid of ideas and Palace just shut up shop, and then you just throw an aimless balls into the box and they're getting headed away, or there's lads taking mad projects, and there were a couple of these, by the way, but, you know, just like all you've got is someone thinking that like Dejan Lovren, you know, Joe Gomez the other week,
Thursday night.
But yeah,
Sabo from some point in that second half.
But like, Szoboszlai can have a shot. Yeah, I don't mind him having a shot.
There's a reputation there that he scores them.
He does score those ones. Yeah. But it's Gomez did it against Atalanta, and you're like, what the fuck? That's a sign that
how many shots he's had this season?
I don't
about 700.
Gomez. 17. And do you know how many he's got on target? One.
Yeah.
I don't remember it.
There was a little period where I felt like he was getting closer.
Yeah,
the Arsenal game around Christmas like time.
I remember looking at the stats at the time, and at that point he'd had 11 shots. I don't think he'd had one on target, right, which is why maybe I was disagreeing with
it.
Post
or something? There was one I remember near anyway when he got into the box in the near bus. Anyway, the point is that it's worrying that our attacking players aren't taking chances, but nothing is more worrying than not creating chances for them to miss. And I know this is
Arsenal conversation this from a few weeks ago.
That's it. You know, we were the top goal scoring team in Europe last week, you know, or whatever, the week before that, or at some point during the season, and not in the first like 3 weeks or whatever, you know, like when Everton were top of the league and it was all great, you know, that one time. I didn't see a team that didn't back themselves or didn't believe that they could still win the game or still get a goal or whatever. So there's that, you know, which it can feel like a stretch. I appreciate.
To be fair, but... you are right. They kept going till the last minute. They just weren't very good.
Yeah,
but they kept trying. We sat here so many times through the course of last season and said they gave up.
Yeah,
that we have not seen.
No.
This is different. This is still the start of a journey with a side, you know.
Yeah, that hunger hasn't evaporated.
No.
Yeah, and I think, I must admit, that was probably the most disappointing thing from Thursday night, to sort of take it back to there, because I've been sort of singing from the hilltops about how at times this season when we have looked up against it or we have had to use our powers of recovery to get back into a game, normally somebody's grabbed that game by the scruff of the neck and gone, no, I'm not having this. It was Szoboszlai a lot earlier on the season, been McAllister more recently, Darwin Núñez up at Newcastle, stuff like that. Yeah, Trent's done it as well. So yeah, people have always taken responsibility and gone, not on my watch. That was non-existent on Thursday. But I think you're right. I think yesterday, certainly second half, there was a collective, this can't happen. Ultimately, it did happen because of whatever, you know, Crystal Palace defended well. We were a little bit profligate, like I mentioned, but there was definitely that sense of this is not right.
It's something, you know, Klopp said he was looking for a reaction from Atalanta, and he's like, we got one. And it's weird. Yeah, you know, but it's weird to say that we got one in a game that we also lost, because I think there is a tendency, and not necessarily incorrect tendency, to go, you've lost both games, so and what? Mm. But the manner in which the defeats were achieved were wildly different in how we did them, which is something.
By the way, that Alisson Becker save deserved us to get
to win the game.
Because that is ridiculous.
It's unbelievable. What the hell's Anderson doing completely free in the box?
He was really good, by the way, Anderson. But what a save.
It's ridiculous. Like, that was his arm, like, broke.
It's Dudek in Istanbul-esque. Frighteningly good.
Ridiculous how good that saves.
In terms of positives, Alisson Bach mentioned it, just said it there. Trent Bach, huge. I was having a look.
We got to see Alisson's wife.
Oh, yeah, we did.
We were getting to see the Becker family. Yeah, we saw the family. That's a beautiful family.
I just stared at her and was like, I know who you are. And then Natalia. Once I'd walked past her, I realised who she was.
Oh, nice. Yeah, that's nice. Beautiful people. Great to have them back at Anfield on a more regular basis. Yeah. The whole Becker family, particularly Alisson.
Yeah. As far as
Liverpool's title chances go, realistically, it is Alisson above Natalia.
Natalia.
Lovely woman. Can't she save anything?
No, probably not. She's very slight. She wouldn't fill the goal the way he does, is what I'd say. But anyway, good to see him back. But yeah, I was having a quick look, and I think the last time that Trent and Robertson appeared on the pitch together might have been Burnley back on the 10th of February. And I think Trent only played 45 in that as well. That's the two best fullbacks in the Premier League of the last decade. A pivotal part of how Liverpool have played and the success that they've achieved in that under Jurgen Klopp, having them available to us is going to be a huge boost, almost incalculable. And you saw it, and I said it to you a couple of weeks, you know, a lot of people having the conversation about the right back stuff, what happens, where does Trent go, blah, blah, blah. And I said, he's just going to come back in and you're going to go, oh yeah. And it wasn't quite
that's exactly what happened when he made that first run.
Yeah,
I thought, oh God, and then he was shit after that. But that, you're right, the initial thing was, oh my God, he's back, thank God.
He was dangerous on the ball. He made some good balls into the box. It was fine, and we'll see more of that. It actually was a relief to have someone you could kick the ball to that wasn't Alexis McAllister and demand he pull something out of his ass. Having another player like that on the pitch is not going to make us
worse. Can I just say, I mean, I know we all want to be negative, but I mean, well, yous don't. I'm just hoping that this helps us, because the pressure is now not on Liverpool anymore.
That.
It's not in our hands. We're not expected to win a league title. We're the third best side. We've got absolutely nothing to lose. You're 3-0 down in the Europa League. You're 2 points behind league leaders, and it's Manchester City, which is a lot scarier than Arsenal. Just go for everything. You've just got to go for everything. And if you get battered, you get battered. At least you've got to give everything for the last six games in the league. But also Atalanta, you've got to throw everything at it. Yeah. And hopefully that helps us.
There is one thing. I just lastly on that. It being City in the lead is stupid because we should all be really angry about that. But there is also a relief. And I keep doing this. I want to be this, like, for the good of football, someone needs to not have it be Man City. But I tend to feel more that way when it's Liverpool. Arsenal. Uh-huh. I don't want Arsenal to win the league. And so there is a little thing of, like, my brother-in-law's an Arsenal fan. He messaged me yesterday. He was like, never mind. You know, we could also... I'd rather City win it now because it doesn't... No one really cares because it doesn't matter that it's City. And there is a thing of that's all going to come crashing down at some point anyway, so you know. But yeah, that does take a pressure off in and of itself, because it would be annoying to lose to another proper football team in Arsenal, who've been, you know, actually well constructed, and they've bought well, and they've coached well, and they've done it without having to cheat and
yesterday on Twitter, immediately after the Arsenal game, it was just congratulations Man City and 115 charges trending, like almost in tandem, in unison together. It was glorious. Just finally on us, we've kind of skirted around it a few times, and we do look like we're in our own head a little bit, certainly in the final third. It feels like, you know, when like an office is sort of not working the way it should do, and like the manager goes, fuck it, we're going to go to Alton Towers. It kind of feels like that with us at the minute, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Like we just need something that isn't footy related, like a day together, just out on a retreat somewhere.
We had this in the COVID season where we went to play Leipzig and Liverpool were garbage, and then we weren't brilliant against them, but that was like there was just something to, they got away, they changed the scenery a little bit, and they were just a bit better for the what kind of followed, and hopefully there's that. And I agree, the pressure off thing, we'll discuss Atalanta after we take a short break. But yeah, the Villa game changes things. We're going to be talking about Arsenal Villa in much more depth and detail, and what it means for the league title on the Bias Football podcast, which we're going to be doing live after this. The reason we're recording this a little earlier is obviously it is the Hillsborough anniversary day, so we wanted to not be live during the normally observed minute silence at 3:06. So yeah, we're doing this early, and we're doing that a little bit beyond that. So yes, anyway, go to redmenplus.com for that one later on. Break from us, yes, Atalanta when we return, and we're going to somehow pick an 11 for that.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Right, okay, yes, Atalanta. And look, there was a case, Chris, a week ago, a strong case, after the debacle of that performance at Anfield. And Jamie Carragher was at the forefront of this, saying, right, that's it. Just spew the Europa League off, send the B team over to Atalanta and then focus on the league. And then Liverpool lost to Crystal Palace and fell off top spot.
So what, are we playing the B team in the league now? Or?
So exactly. And so my overall sense of this is, and a bit what we were in the part one of, just fuck it now. Just throw everything at everything. There's not that much footy left to be played. You know, if we go for it all and fall down, then fine. But I see no reason why we shouldn't just go for it.
Ultimately, what you're talking about is one game.
Yeah.
It's one game extra or it's not. So throw everything at the one game that you're guaranteed, and hopefully that leads to more games. If you can score in the first 10, 15 minutes in Atalanta, anything can happen. Yeah. That's what you've got to go for. It's a massive competition. We want to win it. We want to go to Dublin. We want to lift a huge trophy. It still might be a better chance of us winning that trophy than winning the Premier League this season.
Yes.
So you've got to go for both competitions. Of course you have. I say, look, anything can happen in the league. Right now, and I was the same as you, Dan, and I said this on this podcast last week and the week before, I thought every team would drop points. So far, two of those teams have dropped points. There's a third one probably coming at some point. They will drop points. Are we good enough to capitalise? Different question.
Mm-hmm.
So, but in focus on Atalanta, get a goal in the first 10 minutes and see where the chips land.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. I just, you know,
if you don't win, it's one game. It's not like... You it's not five games where you're worrying about backup players and all that type. It's just one game.
You said it before, Chloe. I said it on my post-match video after Palace. We're in miracle territory here. That's what it would be. You know, it won't be classed, you know, because it's Atalanta, not Barcelona. But we are going away to a tiny little ground in Italy against an Italian team that absolutely had our number last week. It's a stretch to expect Liverpool to score the three goals that would take us to extra time, you know, and potentially perhaps the four that would see us as outright winners in that. But there is something to this. Has been Jurgen Klopp as Liverpool manager. I won't give up until I see that it's possible. You know, it'll be 5 minutes on the clock and it'll be 0-0, and I'll still be chanting, waiting for a goal. If you can somehow pull off a miracle here, then it shouldn't be underestimated what a bounce that could give the rest of the season.
Yeah, use all the anger and the disappointment that you felt in this last week and make sure you go and demolish them, because we had the chances against Palace. We know we can create those chances. Just volley the ball in the back of the net, please, through anger, and make sure that we find ways
that.
To do. We did.
Darwin
did try
weekend.
That, to be fair. There is something there where I just feel like you need to use the last week as motivation to really get yourselves back up for it. You can't let this last 6-7 games become, 7 including Atalanta if we go out, like, but you can't let it become defeatist. You can't, that can't be your attitude. Your attitude has to, okay, well, I've got at this moment in time 7 games left of the season, so I'm going to give everything. I'm going to give absolutely everything for the last 7 games, because anything can happen. And look, there has been stranger things to happen in life than Liverpool scoring 4 goals and going through to a semi-final of a European competition. It'll be harder because we're away, and it'll be a horrific atmosphere to be in because they'll be right up for it. But this is Liverpool. Get a goal within the first 5 minutes and see what it does to that atmosphere. Get yourselves back up. If we can just start scoring those goals, and one of them goes in off someone's arse or something, right, that can lift you. And if these footies start landing at your feet and you've scored a goal, boss, let's try and dispatch them more. But yeah, look, we've got to give everything, and I hope we do. And if we do come out of here and we've somehow got through to the next round, if we've got through to a semi-final of Europa League, it's very much the rest. It's to Arsenal. I don't know how Arsenal are going to do against Bayern, but if it doesn't go well for them, the Arsenal fans are going to be sitting here going, they're in a Europa League semi-final. City are going to walk the league and they're probably through to a Champions League final. Like, it just, it affects other opponents as well as us. Let's just see what we can do.
But just from that, our perspective, the lift that is. But I think what's interesting about this is that, look, I'm reaching for positives here, Dan, and, you know, Liverpool have got an absolute mountain to climb, make no bones about it. I'd call back to the second half against Villarreal in the semi-final 2 years ago, where they had the goals and it was in their grasp all of a sudden. But when it's in your grasp, all the pressure is on you. Liverpool go there, completely free. And yes, the atmosphere, but their fans will feel that too. And goes back to Chris's point, if you can get a goal in the first half, it'll just make them think. And all of a sudden, those celebrations that they were doing at Anfield, which were fully deserved, by the way, they came and got a massive win, massive result. The idea of like, no, let's travel all these 1,000 miles and then just keep a lid on it, get fucked. Mm. They were right to go absolutely nuts with the celebrations post that game. But yeah, it's theirs to lose now, and that's something that we need to be able to play on.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, and as you say there, you know, they did a number on us at Anfield, so I don't blame them whatsoever for reacting the way they did, because nobody would have given them a chance really heading into that game. So full credit to them for that. But you're right, if we can, and the early goal that they've mentioned already, the early goal is absolutely massive in this for me, because all of a sudden that little doubt just creeps into the minds of players and then the fans, and it kind of spreads throughout the team a little bit. And if we are looking like our usual selves, we are getting back to business and the confidence does start to come back a little bit. That momentum's a funny old thing in football as well. All of a sudden, it's a different ball game entirely, and who knows what can happen from there on out. You know, strange things have happened, certainly with Jurgen Klopp's Liverpool. But yeah, for me, ultimately, you know, what other teams do, our rivals in the Premier League do, is one thing. But after yesterday, I'm a little bit like, can I just forget them? Let's just take care of our own business. Let's get back to winning games of football our way and just focus on ourselves, because that will sort of take care of itself. But we need to concentrate on us for a little bit. And I think we can't dive under it. I've said it for a few weeks now, and it's felt kind of like we've been playing within ourselves, and we've all been sort of looking at what's to come down the line. Forget that now. That's done. That's done us no favours whatsoever. If we're going to go out in style, at least have a go, because we're not
just
the
win
type.
The game. Win the game.
Yeah, and then who knows what breeds after that. Yeah, yes. If we win 3-1 and we don't quite get through, but at least we've won the game, we've got some goals, a bit of confidence, who knows? At least don't, again, go out in style, because that's the way we go about our business. We don't go out with a whimper more often than not. We go for it, and that's what we need to do
right now. Go down swinging without a shadow of a doubt. Yeah, no, I totally agree with that one. Some big question marks over selections, therefore. Quiveen Kelleher in goal?
No.
Alisson Becker.
Played every Europa League game for us this season.
Yeah.
Been brilliant.
Yeah. Also, until this one.
No, Alisson Becker.
He needs a minute, doesn't he?
Yeah, which is crazy for a keeper, but we need the best Alisson Becker we can possibly get. Between now, again, there's no room for sentiment. There's no room for... You've had the Europa League at this point now. We need the best.
Level them up, I think, on appearances this season.
The best version of everyone between now and the end of the season to me, and that's Alisson Becker.
Trent Alexander-Arnold.
It looks like he's probably going to have to play, isn't he? But I would say I actually wouldn't mind seeing Joe Gomez in this game.
Okay.
If Trent's ready to start, Trent starts for me. We need that extra attacking impetus to chase this.
Yeah.
Virgil van Dijk?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Kanate or Kwanzaa?
Kwanzaa.
Oof.
Dan?
Deciding vote. Do you know what's mad? There's not much between them in terms of form right now, is it? That's such a crazy thing to say. I would be Kanate.
Okay.
Okay.
Just...
Andy Robertson?
Yeah.
Yes.
Has to be.
Wataru Endo?
No.
Alexis McAllister?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sir Bosley Jones?
Yeah.
Anyone want to disagree with Sir Bosley Jones?
I don't know. You know, I'd look at Trent in the middle.
So
your game
right
is right back, Trent DM.
Trent DM.
And then I'll have McAllister and Szoboszlai.
Wowza, okay.
I'd like it, but he's not going to do it.
Listen, we don't need defensive midfielders, we need goals.
I agree. hence the no Wataru Endo.
Yeah, hence Trent.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, same.
And McAllister is the one who's in the best form, probably, of the
more
the
advanced
others.
Ones.
So put him there.
He's been incredible. And he hasn't quite looked the same as he's done there. It's a fair point. Okay.
Cody Gakpo or Luis Diaz? Or Diogo Jota?
I think it's Diogo Jota.
It's Diogo Jota.
You've got to get Diogo Jota in that team.
Yeah, because my attacker is going to be Cody Gakpo potentially.
Wow.
So Jota, Gakpo, Salah for you, Clown?
Potentially, yeah. Look.
Diaz, Jota, Gakpo.
There's three names. There's three names that just got said.
Wow. Okay. I don't think anyone else has or will say that, but there you go. It's said by Chris Pajak, everyone.
I think you have to get Jota starting. I'll get that out there now. For lots of reasons. the fact he's so clinical, the fact we aren't so clinical right now in spite of what he did yesterday. But also, and this is such a silly thing to say, so forgive me, he scored a hat-trick last time we played there.
He literally scored a hat-trick. Yeah. Well, technically we played at the San Siro, right?
But against Atlanta in Italy, right? I just think the memories thing, who knows? And we are in miracle territory, as you rightfully say, so let's cling on to every possible outcome.
There's something to Darwin Nunez. It can bring on with half an hour if you really look him to chase it and go mad. And I think there's something in that. I think start Diogo Jota for me, centre forwards, and have Darwin there chomping at the bit, ready to come on. And
if he's got an hour in him, he has to start the game, doesn't he, Jota? Because you don't take someone off at the half hour mark. So he's got to start.
Yeah, okay. Good team we're talking about here, one way or the other, isn't it? Yeah. Kind of excited. We had a load of super chats and stuff which I meant to read when we were doing all the miserable negative stuff in the middle of it. But not to leave people hanging. Javid Iqbal says, I honestly believe we could be at least 10 points clear in the title race if we had taken all our clear-cut chances across the season to pressing. I know, mate, but that's how it works.
No, yeah, I think we'd have more points, but then if everyone was taking the big chances, everyone would.
Erling Haaland would have 70 goals this season if he took all the big chances.
Do you know what Chloe was talking about before, about the deflected goal? I mean, did you see his deflected goal at the weekend? God. Nowhere near.
Yeah. Stargirl says, I said elsewhere that we should go to a 4-4-2 system. We don't have the players to play a 4-3-3, but Salah and Jota are strikers in midfield. Luis, Maka, Endo, Gakpo across a four.
That feels more 4-2-4, but yeah, I like it. I don't mind it.
I thought he was going to take Nunes and Diaz off. I thought he was going to put four up top. I thought it was going to be Curtis for Gakpo.
Same.
Baked says, Salah's still Salah, but when do we wake up and realise he isn't the player he used to be? Recently he missed chances and it looks like he's lost his spark. Boo. Rayan says, absolutely devastated. City will drop points in a game, but we will drop more. I just don't see how we win a game at the minute. Or Aston Mouth. Too many players not stepping up. But Etcham, he was always good for a little bit of positivity. He says, Palace being Klopp's first and final loss. I'm in for that. It was a nice sort of balance. I definitely got those vibes when, with 10 minutes to go, the fucking ground started to empty out. And I looked around and I was like, I had proper flashbacks to that Crystal Palace game in 2015 where Klopp described it as he's never felt more alone. Anyway, let's hope Liverpool don't leave us with many more of those situations on the Jurgen Klopp. Okay, I'm feeling a bit better than I was, despite the fact that I've totally fucked it in terms of the order of things by putting all that miserable shite at the end.
Give us your score prediction then, because I'm no doubt you'll be positive there.
Atalanta 0, Liverpool 4 after extra time.
Oof.
Everyone looked at me, I'm all in on that. I'm fine with that.
I think they scored. It's my problem.
Yeah, I think Atalanta 1, Liverpool 4, and then Pens.
I can't with Pens.
5-1 the Reds.
Go ahead.
5-1.
Fine. Yeah.
Why are we like this?
Why are we
doing it to ourselves?
We watched yesterday. Did everyone watch what we did yesterday?
Yeah, I've seen us play twice this week.
She's got Nunes for that.
I've got him for volume one at the keeper and then the rest goals.
God. Yeah. We've probably left it a bit too late and a bit too much of a mountain to climb, but fuck it. Standard Liverpool in like the 90s in this situation would go and win 1-0 there.
Yeah.
And you'd be like, well, fair enough. Pish. But fine. But yeah, whatever. Look, again, say there's just games of football to be played now. And if we do it, then it'll be we're about to have either one of the most famous Liverpool nights of all time.
Or a big fat damp squid.
But just a game of footy. You know what I mean? It'll just be a game of footy. Even if we lose it, we win 1-0, we lose 1-0. Whatever, you know, Liverpool should be out because we fucked it so badly last week.
The only way I am watching this game of football with any form of happiness is if I convince myself that we're winning 5-1.
And you've got that belief.
That is the thing,
wasn't really a score prediction, it was a hopeful prediction.
Yes, it was.
But you've got to see it on the pitch, because that's what this is. This isn't about the fans, because you're not going to hear the Liverpool fans. There's about 300 of us in that ground, small as it'll be. It's
whose fault's that?
When we play Bruce Borussia Dortmund. Well, we played Borussia Dortmund at Anfield and they scored the early goals. I remember thinking like, ah, shit. Like, you know, that lead we had was gone. All of a sudden, we're in loads of trouble. And then I think Adam Lallana had a chance and it was like, oh, okay. And you just need something to grab onto. You just need to get an early shot across the bow. Don't even need to score. If you score, do it. You know, again, Barcelona. Mm-hmm. But if you can just get buy-in from us and, you know, and from the world early days and show that we can cause them problems, then fucking why not? But if we don't do that and it just becomes one of those games where you don't get near their goal for 45 minutes, 50 minutes, you're into the second half and you've not created a meaningful chance, then it'll be what it'll be.
On the evidence first leg, it's obviously really hard to see us going there and doing what we need to do, and obviously not allowing them to score feels almost impossible. But if it was sort of reversed and we'd have gone away first leg, and if someone was to say Liverpool are going to be 3-0, I'd have gone, yeah, that's that can happen. You know what I mean? So it's not out of the ordinary. It's just what we've seen last week suggests that it feels really difficult to do.
Also, winning that by that many goals away from home is just hard.
Yeah.
It is. But if there's one football club that can do it and it's proven to do it in European competitions, it's most definitely us.
Well, you should have said Liverpool Football Club there, Chloe. That's how we talk when we say sentences like that. Come on. Right, we'll wrap up. If you want more football chat from us, yeah, we're going to take a short break, obviously, to commemorate the 35th anniversary of Hillsborough. And once again, obviously, all of our thoughts go out to any of the survivors, the forgotten people of that, you know, of course, the 97 and the families of those who were bereaved, but of course, the people who actually had to live through it and survive beyond that as well. So, yeah, our thoughts go out to all of those people affected. Yeah, we will return with the Bias Football Podcast over on redmenplus.com. Please do come and join us over there. But yes, other than that, thank you so much for watching, for listening. Hopefully we've managed to leave you fractionally more optimistic for what's to come. Fractionally, if nothing else. Right, we'll be back with another one next week.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.